Okay, so can you hear me, Kyle? You can hear me good?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, so today is Thursday, April 16th, 2023. It's 5:10, and we'll call this meeting to order. And Ruby, you want to do the roll call? Karma Opie, here. Steve Robbins.
Here.
Ben Junaby.
Here.
Sonia Fager. Mike McDougall. Jackie Helmer. Andy Babich.
Here, virtually.
Celia Selman. Don Woodruff.
Here.
Ruby Becker.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum. And are there any guests online that would like to introduce themselves?
Hey, Carmen and members of AEP, this is Jeff Wells. I'm the assistant area biologist for Alaska Department of Fish and Game in SOAP.
And this is Jeff Gross. I'm the area biologist in TOAP.
And this is Kyle Campbell with the Board of and I don't believe there are any other guests. If anyone else joins, I'll make sure to let you know.
Okay. Welcome, guys. And here we have Samantha Hoskins and Helen Gilmore. All right, today I think we're just kind of getting together to see if we have any ideas for the board proposals and then to get the, to redo the Moose presentation that Jeff gave that we couldn't hear at the last meeting. And so is there any concerns or comments from the public? No, just in general right now. We'll get into the Moose update here pretty soon. No concerns from the public. How about any concerns or comments from the AC?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a RAC meeting in March. This is our wildlife cycle, and there were some wildlife proposals to extend the season in 25BDAG. They're not left mostly food spots, pirate shell, October 15th. So we'll vote on that at our next meeting in October, and then we'll go to federal board. Today. October 7th now. Turn at the meeting about harvesting moose late in the season. Feeding purposes or bolts and rest. I explained to Linda Evans, who was sitting next to me, that if we're not that late in the season, October 15th. Desperation on, otherwise we're not going to have enough to eat it. And she agreed that that's not such a bad idea. All right, Pat, thank you.
And you said that was in 25A, B, C, and D?
All of 25.
Okay.
I don't think it includes Fairbanks. You know, Fairbanks is 25 also. So it's Yukon class mostly, and then the 25 across the river on federal ground.
Okay. Thank you, Don. Any other comments from the AC members?
Yeah, Karma, Andy.
Yes.
Yeah. Just to give you a heads up, my connection's dropping in and out, so I'm not sure when I drop out. I just wanted to also inform you that we put in a proposal to extend marten season to coincide with lynx season. So that would be increasing the marten season until, I believe it was March 15th instead of February 28th. And that's just to help trappers with continuing to be able to run their full trap line with both lynx and marten without having to pull marten sets. And the justification for that was that the spring seasons are lasting much longer now due to climate change. Generally, winter is going at least 2 weeks farther into spring than it has in the past, and that marten are still prime during that March 1 through March 15th. So it's just to help trappers maximize trapping ability in the spring. That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you. I have a question, Andy, is that for all areas in Alaska, or is there specific areas that
you know? Yeah, we did it for 20E and 25. B. So local, but you know, I basically put it in for our local region here, and I figure if any other ACs want to pick it up and piggyback onto it, they can. But it was primarily to help trappers in our region.
That's all federal. All right.
Correct. That would be a federal, but it would also go as a state recommendation as well. So it'll go before. Hopefully both the Board of Fish and the Board of Game, and it might be really good for our AC to put that proposal in as a trapping change regulation as well, and that would help support it. So it's not just federal lands.
Okay. All right. Any other comments? Okay, so your meeting minutes are behind the meeting minutes tab. Go ahead and take a look at those, and when you guys are, you agree they're okay, I'll get a motion to accept the meeting minutes.
And Karma, I just wanted to say Gail Vick from the Fairbanks AC, please.
Oh, Gail is on?
Yes, I'm here, Karma. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Sorry, somebody else was talking. If you have a little microphone, just put it in front of you, Chilia. You want to put it in front of you, Enter? That way. And maybe you want to talk into the microphone?
Just thank you.
Oh, okay. All right, so, we're going over the meeting minutes right now.
I'll make a motion to approve that.
Steve Robbins made a motion to approve the meeting minutes, then June will be second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
And then looking at the agenda, is there does the agenda look okay? If the agenda's fine, you guys get a motion again.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second.
Ruby makes a motion to approve the agenda. Don Woodruff seconds. All those in favor?
I was an alternate last time. Am I allowed to make a motion?
Didn't we make Ruby a voting member?
So, yeah, Ruby was appointed as an alternate, I believe, at that last meeting, or it might have actually been in January. So an alternate is acting as a member whenever there's any other member absent. So I didn't quite catch on your roll call. If there were any members absent, then Ruby would be seated as a acting member tonight.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we'll go to staff updates for Jeff Wells.
All right, thanks, Karma. I'm going to go ahead and try to share my screen.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys seeing PowerPoint slide?
We are.
All right, excellent. Yeah, I'm glad to hear the internet's working today. I know that can be a challenge. It wasn't the last one, so. Good to hear. So, and just to reintroduce myself again, my name is Jeff Wells. I'm the assistant area biologist for Fish and Game out of the TOC office. So, just I want to give a brief update for Unit 20E Boost. So, I'll just go over brief harvest summary through last fall and then give an update for the moose surveys that we and Parkers did last fall as well. So, just out of the way, jumping right into it. On this graph, I show reported numbers of RM865 moose hires from 2005 to 2022. And this is a reminder that RM865 moose permit covers almost all of Unit 20E other than a remote area. But all the road accessible portions of Unit 20 is covered by the RM865 moose permit. So, you know, overall number of moose hunters since about 2016, reported number of moose hunters has been fairly stable. This spike in 2020, you guys probably remember that's when the one year that hunters could have both the 40-mile caribou and the registration moose permit at the same time. So that's why there's that spike this year. And total number of hunters for this last fall was just over 850. So moving on to harvest. So this is, again, specific to the RM865 permit, but this time it's reported moose harvest. And just for reference in terms of RM865 harvest compared to unit-wide harvest, RM865 harvest accounts for about over 90% of the total harvest. So 2022 harvest, reported harvest was 149 bulls. So that's down compared to the last several years, certainly. It is above the previous low we saw in 2013. But certainly lower than the last several years, which ranged more 180s to 230s. And this lower number from last fall, that's not specific just to Unit 20E. In general, across the interior, harvest was generally down. So that's all I have on harvest. I'm going to move on to talking about our moose survey from last fall. And so it's just to provide an overview of where our moose survey areas are. So this outline in red is Unit 20E. So here, can you guys see my mouse?
Yes.
Okay, good. So up here is Eagle. This is obviously Taylor Highway. We got Chicken right here in the middle. And then down on the southern end here is Coke. So this area in the northern part of the unit shown in light green, this is the area that the Park Service of Yukon Charlie typically surveys. And they surveyed about every 3 years or so. So they surveyed their area in last fall, last November. And we focused our moose survey efforts in southern Unit 20E, generally south of Chicken. And specifically since 2014, we focused our survey efforts in what we call the Taylor Corridor survey area. So here's Chicken shown by the yellow star. So it's essentially the Taylor Highway, either side south of Chicken. This is a fairly, you know, relatively small proportion unit, 20E, about 20%, but majority of the moose harvest occurs from this area. So it's fairly concentrated moose harvest within here, and that's one of the main reasons we've concentrated our survey efforts there. And if a little more detail, so that's what we surveyed it since 2014 generally, but if we go back in time, the area that was surveyed during 2004 to 2012 is the area shown in blue and orange. So if we take that area overlap, then we can look at a longer temporal scale. So when I show the results from the next several slides, it's from within this area that I call the Taylor Corridor analysis area. So jumping into the results on this slide, I show estimated moose densities from our moose surveys from 2005 through last fall, 2022. And on the whiskers on either side of the dot are the 90% confidence interval. So this, those of you that have been on the AC for a while, you guys have seen this graph before. And generally what we saw in Southern Unit 20E was the moose population approximately doubled from about 0.7 moose per square mile in 2005 to about 1.3 to 1.4 moose per square mile by about 2017. Since then, the population has stabilized and potentially has decreased these last couple of years. 2021 and 2022, the point estimates were a little bit lower. However, all these confidence intervals don't overlap. So statistically, we can't say that the population declined, but the point estimates were lower. When we look at bull-cow ratios, that's what's shown on this slide. So again, same years, 2005 through 2022. This is estimated number of bulls per 100 cows. These horizontal yellow lines are our management objectives for this portion of Southern Unit 20 specifically. And you'll notice we've decreased our management objectives a couple times. And right now we're sitting at 25 bulls per 100 cows, which matches Unit 12 bull-cow ratio management objective. So since about 2016, bull-cow ratio has hovered in upper 20s to low 30s. This past year is actually a little bit higher, around 38 bulls per 100 cows. And then finally, here's a graph of estimated number of calves per 100 cows. So again, same time frame, 2005 through 2022. And one thing you'll note here is that 2022 was the third year in a row of low estimated calf-cow ratios. So during these 3 years, 2020 to 2022, they range from 12 to 16 calves per 100 cows. And this is compared to the previous year, 2012 to 2019, it ranged from 25 to 31 calves per 100 cows. So these lower calf-cow ratios during these recent years suggest lower recruitment of the population. And it could be part of the reason our population point estimates were slightly lower during the last couple of years, or certainly could be contributing to that. And then this is the last slide I have. I asked the Park Service this week if they had any results they wanted me to share, and so they provided this graph of their estimated number of moose in their survey area going all the way back to 2003. And it certainly fluctuated a little bit, but one thing you'll notice is all these confidence intervals overlap. And, you know, overall, probably a fairly stable population, but at a much lower density than the southern part of 20E. You know, their densities are around the 2.2 to 0.4 moose per square mile, whereas in Southern Unit 20E, we're above 1 moose per square mile. And I don't have a chart of their bull-cow ratios, but they're quite a bit higher than Southern Unit 20E, around 50 to 70 bulls per 100 cows. This last year, I think it was right around 60. And that's indicative of a fairly lightly hunted population. So that's all I have on the moose update, but happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jeff. So the calf-cow ratio, do you think that's due to, like, the high number of hunters or, like, the snow, the deeper snow? And
Yeah, that's a good question, Karma. So the calf-cow ratio, you know, when we do our moose surveys is in November. So it's basically a reflection of between when calves are born in May through November, approximate reflection of survival of calves during that time period. And certainly, how many calves were born as well plays into that. So, you know, we don't really know for sure why it's lower these last several years, but there, you know, we can hypothesize on a few things. You know, certainly there's a couple of these years we had very high, levels of snow. Snow came early, so that, you know, could potentially play into survival. It could also potentially affect, you know, nutrition of the adult cows the following year. But, you know, one of the other big differences, and again, we're just, you know, hypothesizing ideas here. Spring 2018 was the last year of the weather control that was conducted for the 40-mile herd. And certainly there's a greater number of wolves on the landscape now than there was, during those prior years. So that's another thing that's changed as well. So short answer is we don't really know for sure, but there is probably a variety of factors.
Thank you.
Andy?
Steve, and then Andy.
Hey, yeah, since you guys do the calving, I'm back on the cow and calf. With climate change, is that calving season getting pushed longer and deeper into the year, and maybe we're missing them on our count? Do you think climate change could have a small impact on that? And maybe we're using the same model of our count days from days past?
Yeah, hey Steve, are you wondering in terms of these estimated calf-cow ratios, how that might impact those estimates? Am I getting this right thing?
I'm just curious with with that change on the cow-calf, maybe they're not breeding on the standard times they have, so that's pushing their birthing cycles deeper, further out. I'm just curious if y'all test the same, if you do your survey the same time, if it's 1 or 3 days is the same time frame every year or every 3 years.
Yeah, right. So I think there's a few things I can say about that. One, these calf-cow ratios were estimating in November. So, if there was variation in terms of, even if it was a week in terms of peak and birth in the spring, that in terms of when we do our moose surveys in November, that's probably not going to play a factor in this variation. We fly our radio collared cow moose in the spring, but we usually only fly them a couple times during calving, so we don't really have a really clear idea of the timing of birth, or which obviously goes back to when they were bred. But in Unit 20A, so south of Fairbanks, they have a really long-running moose study there, probably one of the longest runnings, certainly in the state and maybe even in the world, where they've been looking at their radio-collared cow moose every year for, probably over 20 years. And basically what they found is that there's fluctuation in the peak birth or peak date when cows are having calves in the spring, but it really hasn't shown any sort of clear trend, which means that breeding, which has been shown, is largely be linked to daylight and those factors that, obviously daylight's not changing. There's no clear signal that that's changing, at least in that area. One other interesting note, though, is that last spring, the 40-mile herd, we've been doing a bunch of calving work with them, and the 40-mile herd had the latest calving date, peak calving date, that's ever been documented by the herd. The peak calving date was May 29th. Obviously last year we had a ton of snow and a really late spring. So that was kind of an interesting data point for the caribou herd.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, thank you. Not so much a question, just some observations to share with you, Jeff. My observations locally in my area was that almost every cow that I saw in the early summer to early fall had twins with her. However, as the winter progressed with the deep snow, which forced all the moose out of the higher country down into the river valleys, so far I haven't seen a single cow with a calf. So I think there's been a lot of predation on calves, yearling calves, by the wolves. Spent an extensive amount of time on the 70 mile this year. Saw a lot of moose sign there. Saw a lot of moose as spring started showing up, and only saw one female with a yearling calf. So my conclusion is that the long, heavy snowfalls that we're having is doing two things. It's driving moose together for protection. I'm noticing that. And then the second thing is, being forced out of the higher country with the deep snow, the wolves are putting in pretty good trails and are tracking those moose pretty hard and hunting them pretty hard on the side rivers or smaller streams. So my basic conclusion is these heavy snowfall years are really hard on the young moose. They can't move as well. And, as you said, we're right on the board here with NPS lands, which there has been no wolf control ever, really. So I think predation is probably one of the biggest facts. And then the other observation that I had this summer is that I saw more black bears this summer than I've ever seen in my 30 years living here. So I think there's probably a bit more predation in the springtime by bears as well. All right, that's all I had for observations. Thanks.
Yeah, it's interesting, Andy. And yeah, certainly the heavy snow loads are, it's certainly harder on the calves for sure. You know, adult moose are pretty resilient and able to deal with a lot more than the calves. And the other thing I'll say there, Andy, is that the Park Service has a handful, quite a few radio collared cows, and they're basically on the same radio tracking cycle as us in terms of when they're looking at the cows and how many calves are associated with them. So I haven't seen their survival estimate for calves to March, but it'd be interesting to look at that.
Any other comments? Questions for Jeff?
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Carmen. And maybe one other thing I'll say. You know, I know you guys are going to go into thinking about board game proposals here next. One proposal the Upper Canada 40-mile AC is going to put in related to moose is they are going to put in a wolf control proposal. It's going to be focused on the southern portion of Unit 20E. I think, still working on the exact wording, but it's going to be more of a proactive proposal in terms of having maybe some set points to turn wolf control on and off. So that's something that they're meeting on or working on here. They're going to meet next week and kind of finalize those and some other proposals too.
Hey, wolf.
Yeah.
So I just have a question. So what I look at this as the study, I look at the caribou the same way as, you know, one time they're overpopulated and they're starving themselves to death and they're eating too much and they have no cabin, you know, they have nowhere to eat. You know, they run out of food. So I'm just curious, are we going to, you know, is that going to do the same thing to the moose? You know, we want a healthy moose population, but is there any forage studies being done in these areas the same as our moose studies that are done to make, you know, just to make sure that the foliage that's there can maintain the moose population? Or are we going to be looking down the road 3, 4, 5 years down the road and it's going to come back and all of a sudden all the moose are starving to death? So I'm just curious. I think we've talked about that before about the foliage. And I think, Jeff, you presented that once the foliage, where the moose surveys were done. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Steve, that's a really good question. And there's a couple things that we do to track nutrition in the moose population in Southern Unit 20E. The main one that we and other people in Alaska commonly use is twinning rates. So, you know, moose in really good condition have twins at a higher rate than moose populations in poor nutrition. So we've been doing those since about 2004. And then the other thing we did last spring, so a year ago, is we did a browse survey. And so we basically went out and measured a bunch of twigs throughout that moose survey area in 20E. And so between the two of those, you know, we feel like we have a pretty good handle on nutrition right now. And right now things are looking pretty good. Even though the moose population has doubled since 2004, you know, obviously there's a really big fires in 2004. So right now things are looking pretty good. At some point those fires are going to get to a point where they start being less useful to moose. And so we certainly recognize that. And that's one thing as part of this proposal, you know, the AC down here is not looking to necessarily increase the population. What they're trying to do is more or less maintain what we have. And so to try to get ahead of a decrease if it occurs and have a plan and to how to react to that, if that makes sense. They're not looking to increase the population, you know, much greater than what it is.
Carmen, Andy.
Okay.
I think Steve wasn't done for the
man. Yeah, let me try to finish So Jeff, has anyone done the math? If we have the number that we're looking for, the 20-to-1 ratio or whatever that ratio is, has anyone done the math to see if the calf ratio that hit the ground and that lived through the count, what does that look like for the ratio in 2 years? Oh yes, is that the right ratio? I mean, has nature actually corrected itself to put it at the right ratio by those calves not making it?
Let's see, Steve, I'm not sure I completely understand your question. Do you mean you're talking about the calf? You're talking about the calf-cow ratio.
So, well, I guess the ratio that we're after for bull to cow. So, if we're on the higher end of where they need to be, with the calf not making it through this winter, have we taken that figure and put it into a sheet that shows what that looks like 2 years from now or 1 year from now? You know, if it's less calf, is that going to mean, all right, so we're going to have less either cows or bulls? So in that ratio, that should equal that ratio out a little better, right, of the bulls cow ratio. Am I just screwing this up totally?
You know, I understand where you're going now with your question. I think you're right. So if you look at the bull cow ratio, the bulls are on the top of the equation and cows are on the bottom. So both factor in. But I think it's maybe more complex than just trying to relate the calf cow ratio to the bull cow ratio. You know, I think the calf-cow ratio, that's basically giving an idea, again, of what's being recruited in the population in terms of calves. So with those low calf-cow ratios, you know, generally, calf-cow ratios around 25 or greater, roughly, equate to a stable or sometimes increasing population. So when you get down into the teens, which is what we've seen the last few years, you know, those are pretty low. And it just means that recruitment's fairly low in the population, which might mean that the population might decline. And what that means is that if the same number of bulls continues to be harvested out of the population, but the population decreases, then potentially you could see a decreased bull-cow ratio. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But this is something that I'm going to ask. So we may kind of follow up on that. Because I'd like to see it just projected out a year or two. Off the data we have, even if we have to back up to see how that works. Not to drag this meeting on, but.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we could talk more about that, Steve. Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff, can you give us kind of an update, because I've seen here that the following topics will be considered for all game management units: brown bear tag fee exemptions and reauthorization of the antlerless moose hunt. Can you just touch on the antlerless moose hunt again for us, please?
Yeah, that's another good question, Karma. So as you guys know, last year, we had put in an antlerless moose hunt proposal that was out of cycle, and that was approved by the Board of Game. So the way those antlerless hunts work is that in order to stay in regulation, even if we're not going to use it, which we don't have any plans to use it in the next year or even the next few years, but just to keep that regulation in the books, it has to be reauthorized every year by the Board of Game. And so every year for every antlerless moose hunt throughout the state, there has to be a proposal and the Board of Game has to reauthorize those. And in order for them to be reauthorized, the majority of the ACs within the unit affected, need to vote in favor of it. And so that was reauthorized last month at the statewide meeting. But again, we have no plans to issue any permits, to have any antlerless hunts. And we don't foresee having any antlerless hunts in the foreseeable future. But again, in order to retain that in regulation, it has to be reauthorized every year.
Karma, Andy.
And, oh, yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, thank you. Stepping back to our previous conversation, the proposal that the 40-mile AC put in, can you give me the number of that proposal, please?
So, Andy, yeah, there's no number yet. You know, obviously, well, not obviously, but proposals aren't due until, I think it's May 1st. So it's something they're working on. So it's not an actual proposal yet. They're working on developing it. Yeah, it is interested. The Upper Channel 40-mile AC is going to meet a week from today at 7 o'clock. So if anybody wants to join in and discuss or, you know, see what they're thinking, if you guys have any ideas that you would want to get the AC support from here, you guys are welcome to join via Zoom or if you're here in person.
Okay, thank you for that. And if Kyle, if you could send a reminder out, that would be helpful to me. The second,
sure.
Maybe more of a comment than a question, and this might refer to some of the things Steve was asking. You know, from my perspective, what I've learned by living out here for a long time is that all wildlife populations seem to undulate. They seem to have highs, and then they naturally have lows. Sometimes it's caused by predation. Sometimes it's climate. Nobody really fully understands why that happens, but it doesn't matter whether it's fish or wildlife or fur bearers. That just seems to be a natural cycle. So I my own personal conclusion is one of the most dangerous things you can do as a manager is to try and micromanage from year to year on populations because of these natural fluctuations and not to panic if things start to drop too quickly and not to panic too much when they start to rise too much because chances are they're going to cycle and try and find that medium. So it's kind of like a pendulum swinging. There's a period of time where you're kind of in that middle ground, but you're always going to swing one way or the other. And so I just like to remind members of ACs and other entities that make recommendations that is a natural thing that happens, and we as humans tend to want to micromanage, and we want to try and think that we have control for these. But there are so many variables out there that it doesn't matter how good information you have as a biologist, you're always going to be missing some information that might be vital to that discussion or that decision making. So I guess the way to my conclusion is be patient, be cautious, and look at long-term trends when managing wildlife or fish as opposed to year-to-year management. I just want to make that comment for the benefit, hopefully the benefit of AC members, because I think that that's really important that managers also realize that they don't have that level of detail when it comes to management. A lot of times they think they do, but there's always information, there's always factors out there that they cannot possibly quantify in their analysis. Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the question. Jeff and Jeff did. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a great comment.
Jeff, this might be can you define for me really what antlerless is? I'm not quite...
Yeah, that's a good question, Carmen. An antlerless moose could be a bull that had lost its antlers. So, you know, typically antlerless moose hunts are targeted or designed to harvest cows. But depending on the time of year, for example, a later antlerless hunt that's late winter, then antlerless moose includes cows or bulls that have lost their antlers. So, you know, it's any moose that doesn't have antlers.
Yeah, I knew that cows. I was wondering if bulls were in there. Oh, right. Thank you. So isn't there some concern, like, with the lower calving numbers and stuff, with taking cows, like, or even, you said you're not really opening that up for right now?
Yeah, we have no plans to have any antlerless hunts in the near future. The reason that we'd like to keep that hunt When I say on the books, just meaning as something in our hip pocket, something that we could use in the future sometime if we needed to, is that it's a really good tool in terms of wildlife management. So if we started seeing a reduction in nutrition, or if there was wolf control and there was a harvestable surplus, or we thought that we could harvest a small number of cows sustainably, then that's a potential tool or way to provide for more harvest sustainably. So having that tool and retaining that is a, you know, very useful thing. And the other thing, the Board of Game realizes that we're trying to be proactive in that manner. And that's something they really liked last year with that proposal and I know you guys voted against it, but with that Fortana 40 Mile AC voting for it. So thank you. The short answer is we have no plans in the near future to see any antlerless, hunts. Things that would have to change if we were going to do it is, again, if nutrition declined, if we, saw another, increasing trend or the population increase, which again, calf ratios would probably have to increase before that. But there have to be some pretty major changes before we would think about antlerless hunts or cow hunts.
Karma, Andy, one more question. Thank you. Jeff and Jeff, can you update us on what has been happening in the development of that potential land sale in that southern range? I know that was fairly controversial for, you know, the past year or so, but I haven't heard any updates on BLM's processing of that, or whether that was killed, or whether that's still folks as a possible land sale that might really impact that southern range.
So I think, Andy, I think what you're referencing is the DNR land sale. Is that what you're talking about? Not the DNR?
Correct. I'm sorry, DNR. Yeah.
Are you talking about a 12 mile there, Andy?
Correct. Yeah. There was they were planning on having some, what do they call those, home land sales or whatever, those small parcels of land, opening that up to the Alaska public to put in for those. And there was quite an objection from RAC and from the 40 Mile AC. So I'm wondering what the status of that is at this point in time.
Yeah, so they did cancel that land sale. So they're not, it's dead. So what I'd anticipate is, in a few years, they'll anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5 years, they'll come back to us with probably another idea of a land sale somewhere in 20E again. But I haven't heard of any plans or timelines for them proposing anything else. So as of now, there's nothing going on.
Okay, thank you for that. And one of the reasons why I'm not showing a little bit of concerns about that is I've been doing a lot of research on what the projections are for population growth in Alaska in the next 10 to 15 years, because that's going to really impact rural users for the resource. And every study that I've read is projecting that it's going to be a fairly large migration from hotter zones affected by climate change in the lower 48 to northern climates, and that also as the lands thaw up here, we're going to become more of an agricultural based area, which is going to bring more people up to do that agriculture. So bottom line is the impacts of more people moving to Alaska and the development of more rural lands is projected to be a pretty sure thing into the future. And I know that's a hard thing for people to say, oh, that'll never happen. But it happened to California. It happened to Colorado. It happened to Montana. And it's going to happen here in Alaska. And that's going to greatly impact those of us who have rural styles in toke or eagle or chicken in this region. So it's just something I keep in mind every time I address fishing wildlife proposals and uses. This is something that is going to happen, so it's better to be aware of it and project into the future, because there's going to be a lot more competition for what's out there in the future than there is right now. Thanks. Bye.
Any more questions for Jeff? Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Carmen. And we'll stay on here though, while you guys are talking about potential proposals and stuff. So.
Okay. Both business didn't really have anything on there.
I'm going to the Caribou Conference from the 8th of May to the 12th, and I'll report back to you guys the next AC meeting we have about how much more I know about Caribou and all of you.
Ben's going to that too, right, Ben?
Mm-hmm. Next. What's this, Caribou and Crank?
Crank Anchorage. Based on. Very cool. Okay, so basically I just have on here if we wanted to do any proposals for the Board of Game and the Joint Board. I know one Kyle brought up earlier was to take public testimony during Board of Fish. They didn't do that these last few. You have to be in person. And that's a really good one. I mean, if some of us can't make it, to be able to do our testimony. Are you guys interested in that?
Hey, Carmen, this is Andy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, you know, at our Eastern RAC meeting, we did the alignment of Martin with Blanks. Is that something that the Board of Game will take up this next meeting or would need to be met by the deadline, Kyle?
Yeah, so I, as long as it's specific to one of the units, subunits, or maybe kind of region-wide in the interior, the Board of Game cycle has got the Western and Pacific and Interior up next year, but statewide won't be up the following year.
Okay. I guess what I'm asking is if our AC wanted to support the proposal that is going to go before the Federal Subsistence Board on just aligning Martin at length, so extending the Martin season by 15 days. I'm not sure if there's a I'm sure there's probably a number assigned to that now, but I don't know what that number is, so I wouldn't know the proper way to make a motion to do that other than to just state that that's what we would like to do in a motion, and then I guess that's something maybe coordinators could work out. But I guess it's important to align both federal and state regulations on that if you're going to do it.
Sure, yeah, if I follow me correctly, so I think those federal subsistence the call for proposals only ended yesterday, so I don't know how quickly they turn around and have kind of proposal numbers attached to each of those that were submitted before the deadline. But yeah, if your AC wanted to make a motion to support that that's definitely nothing stopping you from doing it, or if you wanted to wait till that proposal was published by the Federal Subsistence or by the Office of Federal Subsistence, I think that would work as well. I'm not sure if there's like a proposal you'd want to put into the Board of Games specifically that would align that. That might be applicable. Maybe Jeff might be able to speak to that a bit more. I'm not sure exactly where the state and the federal regs on those trapping seasons do or don't align. So.
Jeff or Jeff? Can you help us?
Yep. We're
I think so are you talking about just for Martin or
correct?
It's
basically just to extend extend Martin season 15 days, changing the closing date from February 28th to March 15th, and then that would align with lynx trapping in 20E and 25B, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
We're grabbing some grabs here just to double check.
Okay. Yeah, I think what we're asking is procedural questions. You know, I could certainly make a motion for AAC, but if it makes more sense to wait, then that's fine. I just don't want to forget about it down the line and then miss that opportunity to open both of them at the same time. Because generally speaking, the Board of Game and the Board of Federal Subsistence Board, where possible, like to align hunting and trapping regulations.
Yeah, in that regard, Andy, it probably would make sense to do it now. You know, if not, you're going to have to wait another 3 years for the state Board of Game cycle to put in a proposal. So, you know, if you're hoping to align them, then this would probably be a good time to do it.
Okay. Madam Chair, are you okay with a motion to do this right now?
Yes.
Okay. Just for the record, this is Andy Basich, and I'd like to make a motion that the Eagle AC put in a proposal to align marten trapping closing dates to align with lynx. So the change would be from February 28th as a closing for marten. It would be extended to March 15th to align with lynx in 20E. And 25B.
25B?
25B, correct. And 20E. As in echo.
Did you get those dates, Ruby?
We have a second?
I'll second.
I'm second. All those in favor?
Okay. Let me just speak to the motion because we need a justification when you make a motion and a proposal.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll be brief. So the reason for this is the justification is that climate change is changing winter conditions and that winter is protracting longer into spring, which means that marten are staying prime longer. Excuse me. And so this would allow trappers in 20E and 25B to continue trapping for both marten and lynx at the same time, which will provide for better opportunity for making some money trapping. There is no negative side to this. Simply as stated, marten are still prime, so it's not wanton waste in any way. And so this is in reaction to the changing climate in the eastern interior and the opportunity for monetary income for rural people in the interior. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Farmer, is this a good time for me to read a resolution for the Chinook Salmon?
Sure.
Okay. So I wrote up a resolution to protect Chinook Salmon and I'll start at the top and read it into the record. This is Don Woodruff. Whereas Chinook salmon are extremely critical species for the continuation of cultural practices for Yukon River tribes and other longtime subsistence users. Number two, whereas 7-year-old salmon are now 1% and age 6 salmon are 29% of the run. Whereas age 7 and age 6 were 30% and 50% respectively, resulting in huge drops in the number of eggs getting to the spawning grounds. Number 3, whereas for the past 4 years, we have not met our escapement goal in violation of our treaty with Canada. Number 4, whereas there is no outlook for any change in the near future due to present practices despite no fishing for subsistence users and no commercial fishing for 10 years. whereas the food security is an ever-increasing necessity due to lack of any Chinook salmon available to Yukon River families and their well-being, both mentally and physically. Be it resolved that we request the National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and NOAA to declare Yukon River Chinook a salmon of threatened species. And I'll pass this to them. And so I think that we could discuss that a little bit on if we need to change the wording or maybe add some things to it and then vote on whether we approve the resolution and get it marching forward from our little corner. I talked about threatened species at the RAC meeting the meeting before last and this meeting, and there wasn't really much discussion other than Andy saying that he agrees, but also that he feels that us subsistence users on the Yukon are becoming a threatened species.
Mm-hmm. And I have a question. So what threatened species is compared to endangered species?
Oh, it's a huge step below endangered species. Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a whole series of bullet points that have to be met for that threatened species delegation,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not familiar with it, and I don't think I'm qualified to really go there as far as moving that forward. That would be more of a Fish and Game or U.S. Fish and Wildlife process.
Mm-hmm.
Karma, Andy?
Oh, Steve, brave to send real quick.
So I'm just supposed to follow the chain. So, Don, where does that go once we approve it? We approve our resolution. Where does it leave? I mean,
it goes up the ladder from this lower level. Then it will go to the regional office, you know. And then by approving it here, I can take it to the RAC meeting with a lot more force. As it steps forward. So why don't we just mention it and it goes on, you know, and on and on.
Right, no, I mean, I greatly appreciate you writing this. I'm just trying to figure out what is the steps and what can we do as EC members to help that thing get out.
Yeah.
Or is it just, we can send it to Fishing Game, we send it to the, you know, what department do we send this thing just to make sure that it's getting it so you know that it doesn't hit somebody's desk and they're like, oh, God, it's people again. Let's set it over here in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a thing.
Yeah. Don't know. Andy might know.
Karma, Andy.
Andy? Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully I won't cut in and out. I fully agree with the resolution. I'd like to add a few items to be it resolved. The number one thing is that I would strongly recommend wording to ask Fish and Game not to do their ichneumonas study until a year of escapement is met. They're still planning on doing their ichneumonas studies, and it's calculated that they'll take up to 800 Chinook salmon in that study. I think that's very poor management. I understand why, and I support that, but not at this time. So I think putting some wording in that, be it resolved, that the Eagle Ace year of the ichneumonas study, due to the low numbers and the traumatic impact to the salmon, Chinook salmon. The second thing that might be worth putting into this resolution is there is a very strong movement to try and reduce or shut down pink salmon hatcheries. There is a tremendous amount of science that is showing that pink salmon or very voracious feedings are disrupting the marine ecosystem. There are some very good studies that show direct links between the odd, even, heavy years of pinks and then lower years, and how that's affecting chum salmon and Chinook salmon because the food sources aren't there on the heavy years of pinks, but they are there in a little bit better numbers in the years when the pinks are low. And they're seeing this by looking at otolith, which is, it shows the fish growth during its years out in the marine environment. So there's strong evidence of that. So putting in something also to try and get immediate reductions in a pink salmon hatchery outputs would be a very good first step to try and help the marine ecosystem to be healthier and more productive for all salmon. So those are my two suggestions to maybe add to that, Don. But I'm in full support of that resolution. And then I think that if we do pass that resolution, we should make sure that every other AC on the Yukon River has the opportunity to view it and also support it if they wish to. It's, in my view, it's very critical at this point in time to try and get ADF and GNOC to do the ichneumon study this year. All indications for me is that they're going ahead irregardless of public sentiment. And I think that's very irresponsible on the part of the managers at Fish and Game, given the critically low stocks. That's all I have to say. And then before this meeting ends, I'd like to give a brief update of the Yukon River panel meeting that I just attended. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Abby. Is there any more discussion?
Why threatened and not endangered were their status? And is that a federal designation?
This is Don. This is a process of moving the protection level from, you know, just discussing it.
First, and then maybe.
Correct. Yeah. So it's just a lower level of protection for the Chinook.
But eventually, maybe. Who
knows?
So I would think endangered would be more appropriate then.
Madam Chair, Andy.
Yes, go ahead, Andy.
Thank you. What many people don't understand about once you try and get something registered as an endangered species, A, it's an act of Congress, so it's much more difficult to pass. And number two, when that does happen, that shuts down any industry that may incidentally catch that species as bycatch. In other words, that would shut down all commercial fisheries in Area M and in other areas in Bristol Bay because they may intercept the Chinook salmon down for the Yukon River. That would shut down the entire pollock fleet because it's well recognized that they catch bycatch. So it has very, very high impacts to economies and everything else, and I don't think that you would ever get that passed because of their lobbying power. You're right, it is a much better, much higher level of protection, but it's usually only used as an absolute last resort. There are things that we can do right now in regards to Area M and hatchery production that can have immediate impacts that are not natural and not as detrimental to large economy bases. And there are a number of people in a coalition that are working on these trying to get salmon to the Yukon River, AYK, and Bristol Bay. So maybe Gail could add something more to that because she's highly involved in this. But that's my take on, and I believe what Don is trying to do is basically bring it to attention and alert people to the critical aspects of where we are in our salmon runs right now. That's a good first step. That's all.
Thank you. Gail?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Ed is exactly right when it comes to the federal designation for endangered species that has long-term ramifications that would require probably years of all kinds of politics as well as biology people to get near. I think it's a good statement if you go for the threatened. But I think the real issue is going after the state for the designations of stock for summer and fall chum and coho on the Yukon River, because they are not wanting to push those designations. And we have thought about doing an emergency petition. We might still do that. We probably will do it when the board shifts. The board shifts in June, and we're going to probably put in for an ACR at the in August for the work session in October to consider that. We didn't want to bat our heads against the stone wall of this current board, but the new board, I think, will be more amenable to that. And I think we'll get more traction with that locally to look at those designations of stocks of concern. The Nooshigak right now moved very quickly on their Chinook, and that has, as a result, they have some significant closures to protect the passage of Chinook into the Nooshigak. So we could emulate that. That would be more effective, I think, for the Yukon. But I think in terms of bringing this to everybody's attention, it's a good idea. And most of the ACs are finishing up their meetings right now. We just finished ours last night for the season. We do have a fisheries subcommittee meeting on the 24th, but that's informational only. We can't vote during that meeting. So our next meeting won't be till October. But there's a lot of venues coming up where you could take this petition for discussion and or both of them. And I would like maybe you to consider joining us for when we do that petition as an ACR in August. We can talk about it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Do we want to just go back and say not allow any more fish from a specific year? Because we have to be careful in saying increase, because I don't know. I mean, kind of tricky. I think not increasing off of last year or off of 2021 year, because last year was a large hatchery. Pushed
out. So don't want to
go back one or two years.
I'll
put it in there. I
think
we should.
Madam Chair, Andy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think in the resolution where the sections where you're doing the whereas, you would need to put a line in there that says something to the effect of whereas many scientific papers are identifying high production of hatchery pink salmon are having a negative impact in the marine ecosystem, essentially taking food from other species. You'd have to put something like that in the whereas, and then in the resolve would be to ask for the reduction in or the closure of pink salmon hatcheries or output into the Bering Sea by the state of Alaska.
I guess also as the resolution writer, are you okay with that?
This is Don. I think that kind of makes it a little bit confusing, and it would be worthwhile for us
to write up another resolution for what Andy's discussing and make that a separate issue and put more focus on that rather than combine it with a whole bunch of other stuff. I think it would have a lot more validity if we wrote another resolution discussing overpopulation of salmon in the marine species, pink salmon or coho, whatever they're putting out there.
And Don, do you feel the same way about the Ichneumonas study? I know we're kind of coming in at the end of the ACE period, so we may not be able to get other ACs to weigh in on time unless they call special meetings. But my feeling is if that was brought to other ACs, they might have meetings just to take up that resolution. It's a huge concern to me. I think the Ichneumonas study being done right now is almost criminal given the state of Chinook salmon. And so, you know, I'm just trying to strategize on what might be the most effective thing. And maybe Gail, you might be able to weigh in on that because you're far more knowledgeable on where we're at with some of these things. But I just think those are the two things that need to happen as soon as possible to help Chinook salmon returns. Those are the two viable options that we have that we can pass or get the state to pass or get legislators to pass that will have a direct impact in the shortest period of time to help our Chinook salmon and our fall chum salmon. So I'll just leave it at that. Maybe Gail, you could comment on what you think might be better. One resolution addressing all of them or separate resolutions.
Thank you, Andy, and Madam Chair. I think the separate resolutions would be better. And I think you're absolutely right. I would be willing to send out a request for us to have a May meeting in early May just for these issues. We have not focused on the Ichneumonas report. We should have, but we had too many other things that we were paying attention to. And I would have to do some education, which I can do on the 24th, to the fisheries subcommittee, and I can ask our chair if we can call for a meeting. Kyle, would that still be something that we could do?
Yeah, and I was actually just going to suggest that, so it's within the kind of guidelines in the book here that you can have a kind of a collaborative or joint AC meeting. So if this is especially like a single issue that you're hoping to get several ACs to have one singular meeting kind of before the summer season, because I know the Yukon Flats AC just met the other day by teleconference, and they had someone from the federal side of the Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife Service, a collaborative Ichneumonas study. I don't believe that there was any discussion that came up of kind of something along the lines of what you all are talking about. I just I know the biologist on the call was talking about a sampling project they're planning to kick off here next month in Fort Yukon. So I would be happy to kind of help work with you all to reach out to other advisory committees. There's only a few more that I have scheduled. There's the Mintanana AC is planning to meet on Tuesday next week, and then the Grayling, Anvik, Shagluck, Holy Cross, they'll be meeting on Monday down in Shagluck. So if you wanted me to try and, you know, at least speak to them about this idea to have a joint meeting between several of the interior region ACs, I could bring that up at their meetings next week.
Okay, excuse me for interrupting, but I can bring this up on the agenda for our fishery subcommittee on the 24th, but the issue for the joint, which we all want to do at our AC as well, you don't have the voting capacity. That would be informational. And so if you want your ACs to vote, you have to have a quorum for your specific AC, and that would require that each individual AC would have to have that meeting. But if we want to have a joint on the 24th meeting for this issue, because I agree with Andy, this is overlooked, and it's also very tied in to something else that the department would like to do in terms of allowing some of that summer time to be taken for cultural camps, or I don't know what they're calling it, but that's something that we haven't talked about, and I think there's a real danger here for taking too many Chinook out of the system this year. And so I'd be willing to put that on the agenda, and then we can, EJC can decide if they want to have a follow-up meeting just to vote on that. I'm just throwing that out there as a thought.
Madam Chair, Andy. Yeah, thank you.
Andy, would you write up a resolution?
Yes, I was just going to suggest maybe we should address Don's resolution as presented to us and vote on that. And then I can, over the next 2 days, I can write up resolutions in regard to the ichneumonia study and hatchery production and maybe make those as separate resolutions that could then be brought before other ACs or a joint AC meeting. That sounds like the most efficient way to do it and maybe the most chance for success.
Okay, thank you. Is there any more comments on Don's resolution? So, anybody's interested in passing this? Okay.
Madam Chair, can we have Don read it one more time into the record before we vote on it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Do we have to put a number to it, or Kyle?
No, this would just be a resolution that would be, I'm assuming once it's kind of printed, but no, there's no number that goes to it. It's, you know, a motion has been made in a second, and as long as the majority of your AC is in support of your AC passing a resolution, it might help to put on the record kind of what your intended next steps are, who you want this resolution to be presented to. I'd be happy to help with that process, but I'm not sure exactly who the right recipient would be for this.
I believe it's in the resolution, at the word in the resolution's conclusion.
Okay. Do you want to read that, Tom? Again?
What?
Do you want to read it again?
I could.
Or just into the record?
I'm sorry, I was just writing one up for the other.
Oh.
Okay, this is a resolution to protection of salmon. Be it resolution to protect salmon stocks. Whereas Chinook salmon are an extremely critical species for the continuation of cultural practices for Yukon River tribes and other longtime subsistence users. Number two, whereas age seven are now 1% and age six salmon are 29% of the Chinook run, when before age seven and age six salmon were 30 and 50% respectively in the run, resulting in huge drops in the number of eggs getting to the spawning grounds. Whereas for the past 4 years, we've had not met our escapement goal in violation of our treaty with Canada. For four, whereas there is no outlook for any change in the near future due to present practices, despite no fishing for subsistence users and no commercial fishing for 10 years. Whereas security is an ever-increasing necessity due to the lack of any Chinook salmon available for Yukon River families and their well-being, and both mentally and physically. Be it resolved that we request the National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and NOAA, and Fish and Game to declare Yukon River Chinook salmon as a threatened species.
Karma, Andy?
Yes.
Yeah, go.
You cut out, Andy.
Or Chinook salmon.
Right.
Because we want, is what this resolution is referring to, specifically UConn, Sam?
You cut out quite a bit. I think we missed a lot of what you were saying.
Sorry, am I a little clearer now?
Yes.
Thank you. I just want to make sure at the very beginning of the resolution that you identified the Chinook salmon as Yukon River salmon. It wasn't clear to me. I think you started out as Chinook salmon, so make sure it says Yukon River Chinook salmon. But I agree with the resolution, and in case I drop out, I am in full support of it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You okay with that change? Okay.
I make a motion to approve the resolution on UConn Chinook salmon as read.
Steve Robbins made a motion to approve the resolution. Ben Tunaby second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay. And Kyle, do we take that up? We take that up for you or with the meeting minutes or what?
Yeah, I think that would probably be the best to make sure. I mean, those should be included at least as a separate attachment to the meeting minutes, and I'd post them to your notice for this meeting so anyone can access them after once it's ready. I'd be happy to put it on to, we have kind of like a advisory committee letterhead if that's something you would like. Again, if there's specific kind of recipients you want me to pass that to, I'd be happy to.
I think those four that Don named in the resolution for sure, and then the ERAC maybe. Yeah. Okay.
So are we limited to where those can go? I mean, can we call our legislatures and let's hand them out as DC members? And
we can send them to a congressional delegation.
Okay. That's, I mean, I just want to make sure that Fishing Game and Kyle don't have to, that we have 47 ourselves.
Okay.
As far as I know, there is no limit to who you wanted to send a letter. I think you've gone through all the proper steps to, convened a regular meeting with the quorum present where you've passed a resolution. And then where that goes from there, you could, you know, put it on your Facebook. You can send it to anyone you want.
Okay. Okay, so now with that passed, if Andy wants to write up this second resolution, then we need to come back together to approve that resolution.
That would be my understanding. And I think what I would like to suggest is that I can write something up and share it with Don. And Gail, if you're into that, I can share it with you in case Mike Kramer or someone from Fairbanks AC wants to put their pen onto it as well. So it's collaborative motions for the Ichneumonas and hatchery production. I think we could circulate that between, you know, the three of us within a day or two and hopefully have that ready for presenting. If that's acceptable, Don, are you into doing that with me?
Yeah, Andy, I just wrote up a resolution for, what you were speaking about on the pink salmon, if you want me to read it.
I think I'd like to give, if you want to, that's fine to give, you know, food for thought, but I think if we're going to make a resolution on hatcheries, it has to be pretty detailed and pretty explicit in what it's saying. And it probably ought to cite some papers to support the claims in the resolution. So that, you know, as a general outline, go for it, but I think it's going to need to be fairly fine-tuned if we want to have other entities take action on it.
Okay, I agree.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. There's a couple things I would add to that. As you all know, the hearing fee hatchery issue is mostly Asian hatcheries, so we want to get the State Department has to be involved in that. Whereas in the Gulf of Alaska, it's all Alaska hatcheries. Most of the impact for the Yukon River will come from the Asian hatcheries. The other thing I just want to let you know before I forget, the Fairbanks AC put in 2 proposals on the deadline to curtail egg production at for the Cook Inlet and Kodiak hatcheries to limit that egg production to the 25% of the 2000 level. So we submitted those, and they're in the system right now.
Okay. So we can, when that those proposals come out, then we can just support that if we, right? We don't need to do any other action?
No. I just want to let you know that so that you don't need to replicate that one. That's for the Cook Inlet Kodiak board cycle next year. And so when it comes out in the book, yeah, then we can talk about support letters for that. But I just wanted you to be informed. As far as reducing hatchery production in general, we absolutely need to do that. And we have to work with the State Department in order to have any effect on the Bering Sea Asian hatcheries. But the Gulf of Alaska, we can certainly go through the Board of Fish and the department and the governor's office and the legislature. And there's quite a few actions going on right now in that direction.
Okay. Thank you, Gail.
I just have a question. Once Don and Andy are done with this resolution, and I'm asking because I don't know, is there a way that we can pass this, even if we got it hand-delivered to each member, and go ahead and, so we're not waiting until the May meeting to get it approved? Is there a proper way to get this resolution approved without calling a meeting?
This is a resolution, not a proposal, right?
Right.
So we kind of can do it whenever.
Okay. All right.
So I would recommend that, since it sounds like you're all pretty clear on the intent, and you could kind of, you both put that on the record pretty clearly here, you could pass a motion to support producing a resolution. You could kind of delegate that authority even to the folks that spoke up, so they're going to work on drafting the final resolution. That way it kind of would be coming from this meeting as opposed to needing to have another meeting to discuss it.
Maybe we can put out to have the resolution written up and then just like send it out to the ACs and just get a verbal approval. Can we do that?
So you could pass a motion today that would, with the intent to produce and distribute a resolution with the intent that you've already spoken to, but you might want to put that in the language of the motion should someone make it. For other advisory committees to also adopt or support or pass a similar resolution, they would need to have a quorum present at a regularly scheduled meeting or a special meeting, which does have a shorter advance notice requirement. Special meetings, I think, can be as few as 3 days prior notice. They can only take up the specific agenda item that the special meeting is called for. But again, the process definitely does sort of state that for an advisory committee to support or take an action, they do need to, that has to happen at a meeting with a quorum present.
So am I understanding, like, to make a motion to approve a resolution that we haven't read?
I can make a motion. The motion would be, yeah, that's right.
So then we'll have to come back together to approve it. Yeah, okay. Which is fine with me. I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks on vacation, and then I go to Intertribal Fish Commission, so I'm gone for like 3 weeks.
Just to say one last thing, the course of action I'm suggesting, you wouldn't need to have a follow-up meeting to approve the resolution that you are all discussing today, that as long as it has the support of the majority of the members today, with the intended language, the final resolution can be submitted with the approval of your AC granted today, not at a subsequent meeting. I'm just going to have another meeting if that isn't what you all want to do.
Karma, Andy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry I dropped out for a bit. My understanding of what Kyle's saying is right now, if we made a motion to support a resolution drafted by the Eagle AC on our objection to the Ichneumonas study, and then a second resolution on the objection of high hatchery output production of pink salmon, if all of us are in favor of that, then those resolutions can be written this week and then submitted with full approval by our AC. Is that correct, Kyle?
That is correct, yes. Thank you.
Okay. So if that's the case, what I'd like to do is make a motion that the Eagle AC write a resolution in objection to the Ichneumonas studies scheduled for 2023 on the Yukon River for the study of Ichneumonas with Chinook salmon, and that we would be opposed to that in the resolution. And the second item would be that the Eagle AC would write a resolution on the objection and asking for reduction of pink salmon output by Alaska hatcheries, which are impacting negatively the marine environment for the sustenance for Chinook salmon and other fish. So that would be the motion.
I'll check in if there are discussions.
We're doing two resolutions or we're doing one?
Two. Thank two you. Separate resolutions.
I would just like to ask that AC members be on the email list if they have any input on the resolution.
I can certainly forward it to... Yeah, we can forward it to Kyle and he could distribute it. I would assume.
That would be good. We can just watch the email and the changes of the resolution and then whatever the last final draft. If anyone has comments, if they don't, then we can go ahead and approve it. Does that work?
Works for me.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to speak out of turn since I'm not an Eagle AC member. You might want to consider a third resolution for the governor to meet with the State Department on the Asian hatchery issue.
I'd recommend moving through the motion you have on the floor first before discussing that next point. So I don't think you've taken...
Oh, okay. I apologize. Yeah, I was out of turn on that. I apologize.
So I think there's a motion and a second. And I think it's the mechanics of it will be I can write the resolutions as a draft and then distribute it to other AC members and maybe share it with the Fairbanks AC for comment. And then once all people have put their input, we can finalize those and then pass that, move those resolutions to the appropriate entities. And we can identify in our resolutions, we can identify the entities we want that resolution to go to.
Yeah, and Celia has a concern that she doesn't have email, so we'll print it out and see if she can just come and get it. Or maybe we could set you up an email. We really do. We really need emails just because it's so hard for us to distribute materials to people that don't have emails and stuff, and then you have to print out a lot of stuff. But back to the motion. Any more discussion?
I have something.
Okay.
I'm of the philosophy, the parent's philosophy is keep it simple, you know. And if we start throwing in pink salmon and other fish, that just confuses the issue somewhat for me.
Now, the reduction is for pink salmon. The impacts of pink salmon affect other species, and we'll identify those in the resolution. But the resolution is solely to reduce pink salmon outputs in hatcheries.
Vote. All those in favor of two resolutions, one for ICIA bonus and the other for pink salmon reduction in hatchery fish, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And then we will send those out to Fish and Wildlife, NOAA, EDFNG, the ERAC,
Senator Murkowski's office.
Okay.
NOAA.
Okay. Dale, did you want to talk about Governor meeting with the State Department?
Sure. I just recommend a similar resolution to the one you just passed for the state to go to the governor to engage with the State Department on reduction of Asian hatchery fish. That's just a thought. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I just thought you had mentioned that earlier and you were concerned about that for the bearing fee.
Right. Madam Chair, Andy?
Yes.
Yeah, so I understand where Gail's going with this, and I'd be in support of that. However, I think it's not a bad idea to bring that to the attention of the State Department through a resolution. I'm not 100% sure that our governor and our current political entities will want to engage the State Department on that, given their position on hatcheries. But I do think it's probably worthwhile to at least open up that door to make our federal representatives understand that this is something that's going to require probably a development of a treaty, because currently my understanding is there is no treaty on hatchery production within the Pacific Rim countries, i.e. Canada, Alaska, Korea, Japan, Russia. My understanding and my workings with the MPASC is that there are no treaties in place and there are no entities responsible for setting guidelines or limits on that. So this will basically take the State Department introducing a international treaty with these four or five countries to try and set limits on hatchery productions at the bare long term ask. I think it's a good thing to start now, because I think eventually it's where we have to go. But I also recognize, because I've been thinking about this a lot, that's literally a decade away probably. And there are some entities that will not sign into that treaty, from what I understand. Namely, the Russian entities are not going to be willing to do that, more than likely. That's what I pick up from my listening in on some of the MPASC meetings. So that's just my input. Not a bad idea, but I wouldn't expect much. And I guess what I'm trying to do right now is, what can we do that's going to be most effective right now to try and help Chinook stocks and fall chum stocks in the Yukon River trying to make it to Canada. So that's my emphasis.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
There's one other component to this, and the reason to bring attention to this issue, and it's correct in the long-term prognosis. But right now, the department, as most of you know, and I was there in the Yukon River panel meeting, where the department is put in a request to the delegation for $15 million for an Alaska hatchery on the Yukon River. And I'm trying to track that request down right now, but that would create a real problem for the Yukon. And this, by saying that we want all hatchery to cease, is also signaling to the delegation that most of us do not want a hatchery on the Yukon, but that will require several meetings with stakeholders on the Yukon. I just want to throw that out there that they're quietly trying to push that forward.
Good point.
Thank you.
Gerald, does your Fairbanks AC have any plans for making any kind of a resolution or working on that aspect of it?
We're going to have, we're not going to pass it for this season. That would be in October, but we are going to have that discussion primarily on the 24th. And we're going to have that discussion with YRTFA. We had it briefly today, as you know, with the AYK group. I think we need to be ready to move very quickly in and outside our AC arenas if we have to signify the position that we have. And that might be at the preseason meeting. But there isn't much time at the preseason meeting to have a discussion. Serena was hoping to have that at the NERSA board meeting, which will be toward the end of May. So we're looking for a venue. We can certainly bring it to the AYK. They were very strongly opposed to this, with a couple of exceptions. And there is lower river support for this. If the department is successful getting that money, then you can imagine people will want to use it. And there will be a lot of pressure to put Chinook hatchery on the Yukon. And I'm in the camp that's very firmly opposed to that. So I just want to put that out there as a informational kind of thing that could move very quickly. And we may not have time within the AC framework to respond.
Madam Chair, Andy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that perspective, Gail. I can take a stab at writing a resolution. I'm not sure that I would have all the proper facts and figures as far as numbers of output and all that handy. I don't know if you or any of the members in the AYK coalition have some of that they could feed me, but I certainly could try and at least write up a relatively generic resolution opposing hatchery productions or increasing hatchery productions, which would affect the marine sea system, and we could go from there, and then certainly we could address it more thoroughly when it's appropriate.
I think simple is better, Andy, if you just say it just like you said it. You don't need to go and just say, and then you have the background information for it, to see, because there's a lot of evidence that this, I can give you as much as I have, which is considerable. I just sent one out a little while ago to suggest that the marine environment is negative for especially for Chinook because of the pink production. And I think if we say in a resolution, you have to be say all species, because what's going to happen is that people will support taking out the pink production, but they'll want to put in the Chinook production. And that's not going to work either. There's been no successful Chinook production on the planet
And here's what happens. You get a successful hatch reproduction for up to 10 or 15 years, and then it starts dropping off. And the reason it starts dropping off is because hatchery genetics, when every season, every year, every generation, they weaken their stock and they become less able to withstand the marine environment. So it's just a matter of taking all hatchery production out of the marine environment.
Okay, copy that. Madam Chair, if I can, I'll try and draw up a resolution in opposition to hatchery productions by all countries and try and circulate that as well. So I guess we'd need a motion to write that resolution and support it as an AC, and then we can draft it and do it just like we did the other resolutions. Yeah, I guess that is the motion, so I'll just maybe make it more formalized. Make a motion that the Eagle AC draft a resolution in opposition to all hatchery productions by Alaska, Canada, Japan, Korea, Russia, to further reduce hatchery production and its negative impacts to the marine ecosystem. On wild stocks.
So here, second.
I'll second.
John, second.
And then I'll just.
Any discussion?
Yeah, I'll just reference it. I'll just reference the discussions that we just previously had for support of that resolution.
So I just don't want to bog down everyone if we can hit them with full resolution. So we're going to write out this is a four. So I just
two, right? Well, there's three.
I don't know. I'm just concerned. We went from no resolution, now we're thinking to go through
four.
I just want to know that's my concern. Is I know they're important. But I don't know if what our time is going to get out. I know the first three are extreme. Confirm, that's all. Not opposed to it.
I don't think we need a vote to write a resolution. We just need a vote on whether we're going to accept it. So, I mean, everyone in here can bring a resolution to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe is to support a resolution with the intended language that's being discussed. That's kind of the process here.
And that's stated in the motion. I guess, Madam Chair, from my perspective, every one of these resolutions has merit on its own and addresses a specific concern that is greatly impacting Yukon River, Chinook, and Fall Chum. So that's why I think it's important, and if it's more effective to write four to go out to address these things very specifically, if that's the most surgical way and the most effective way to do it, the number of resolutions you write shouldn't matter. It's making sure that what you do has some teeth and has a chance for having a positive impact. That's the way I see it. All these people involved are used to sitting down and reading a whole lot of times.
One last thing just to address. I'm just curious, and Andy, I mean, I'm in support of resolution. I'm just curious if we don't write a resolution
unless if all these other ACs are going to be on board, is let's share it before it's approved to make sure that we're all on the same common goal. I don't know, it's just a thought. That way we're not...
Yeah, I think, you know, I understand what you're saying and I agree with you, but I think there are time constraints here for one. And then two, I always believe in lead by example. So I think taking the bull by the horns, drafting it, that saves other ACs a lot of time and a lot of debate. They can read it. They can either approve it or not approve it, or they might make their own resolution that adds more points to it, whatever. To send a message out to people up and down the Yukon River that these are critical things impacting Chinook salmon and fall chum, and we need to take a unified action on it. And I think most ACs, from what I've seen in the past, if it's something that they believe in, they just sign on board. They don't need to get into a big, long discussion about it or try and modify it or whatever. Sometimes that happens, but not very often. So you're actually saving them a lot of time by drafting the resolutions, presenting it to them to either support or not support. That's been my experience anyway, from what I've seen over the years. But I understand your position, Steve. I do. I just think we don't have time right now because of the season. If we were doing this in January, it'd be a little bit different ballgame, I think.
Well, if there's no more discussion, let's just go ahead and vote. All those in favor of supporting the resolution on opposition of hatchery production on salmon stock, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Sorry, Andy. No opposition. Okay. So... And you'll send those around to the AC just so that we can look at it and then... Okay.
Karma, would you like a real brief update on the Yukon River panel since we're talking about fish right now?
Sure, yes, please.
Okay. I apologize again if I cut out. I don't know when I cut out, so sometimes I go on and I'm... you guys can't hear me, but I'll try and keep this brief. Yukon River panel met last week. We had discussions both as separate delegations and bilaterally. The main topic of discussion were two things. One was trying to come up with an escapement goal for 2023. The Canadians want a much higher escapement goal, up around 55,000. The U.S. is still holding on to the old 42.5, which has been in place forever on the Yukon. And even at 42.5, we're not meeting those escapements. There was quite a bit of discussion. Virgil and I were about the only ones on the Alaska side that were in support of raising the escapement goals. There was no other support from the department or other panel members. So that was the position they took. We brought it to the bilateral section and agreed upon for 2023 was a JTC, the Joint Technical Committee's recommendation of the low end being 42.5, the mid-range goal to shoot for 55, and the higher end 62,000 fish. The ironic thing about all these discussions is the projections are for less than 30,000 Canadian-bound fish, excuse me, to return. So basically, we're arguing about fish that aren't even out there to come back. So that was kind of disappointing from my perspective. But that was the end result. As Gail mentioned, the Commissioner of Fish and Game attended the full meeting, and he brought up the idea of hatcheries, both to the Alaska delegation on its own, and then also that was brought to the bilateral panel. Virgil and I were adamantly opposed and stated that at our delegation meeting. Many of the other panel members were in support of hatcheries. When it came to the bilateral section, the Canadians, surprisingly, were a little bit open to hatcheries, but not large-scale production. They were mixed in their views, but their biggest concern is they're terrified that they're going to lose the genetics and the Chinook salmon runs with only 12 to 15,000 fish going across the border. Many of the spawning grounds only saw one or two mating pairs, so they're really afraid of losing the runs and losing the genetics. So for them, hatchery production is not meant to be big scale. If anything, it's just to try and protect some stocks. However, we're trying to educate them a lot with a lot of these studies that show that in no case has any hatchery ever had a long-term positive effect. So that's an ongoing thing. That's where we left that. So those were the two hot topics at the panel meeting. No real true resolution. There will be further discussions on hatchery productions. I am very concerned about the Alaska side wanting to embrace it. I think it's really important that outreach go to all fishers up and down the Yukon River so that they can be fully informed on the very serious negative impacts to hatchery production to try and either bolster or replace wild stocks. It doesn't work, and the science has proven it. So anyway, that's kind of a real quick synopsis of what happened at the Yukon River panel meeting. And I don't know that there's any real hot topics other than that. But a lot of concerns about the continual long decline of Chinook salmon. And I guess from my perspective, what I've been trying to share with them is that in no way have we ever mitigated for the loss of larger fish and less eggs. There's been no steps to either increase escapement or the quality of escapement to try and address the loss of more egg production across the border. We're losing it, and I think the JTC report said that up to 30% less eggs are going across the border now than in 2000, so that's pretty huge. A lot of these views are my own personal views, but that's generally what I got out of the Yukon River panel meeting. That's all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Andy.
I got a question. Andy, I got a question. Is that escapement goal for 2023 or 2024?
2023 only. So it's just for 1 year, so we're right back at the table again for next year. And I guess from my perspective, what I found astounding was all of ADF and G's projections. And as you know, they have a very tight correlation on juvenile output and its relationship to what returns. That's showing this year and next year to be very poor returns, not expecting to meet escapement goals. Yet they were still, I asked managers, if the escapement goal 2.5, and we had 44,000 fish come across the border, estimated to come across the border, would you open up a limited Chinook harvest? And they told me it's highly likely. But at the same time, they know that 20,000 fish were missing from the run last year, and they're blaming it on ichthyophonus. So they can't even manage the run within 20,000 fish, but they're willing to try and open up the fisheries for subsistence fisheries with only a very small surplus about. And I think that is exactly what to the situation we're in with these long declines of salmon on the Yukon River. We have had escapement goals that are way too low, that aren't accounting for the loss of fecundity. And then on top of it, what you identified in your resolution, Don, we have not made escapement goals 5 out of the last 10 years, and we haven't made it for the last 4 years. That's huge on production. It's okay to miss an escapement goal every now and then. When you do it that consistently, it has dramatic impacts, in my view. But ADF and G didn't seem to be too concerned about it, and that was really shocking to me.
Anything else on that? Is Gail still on?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Gail, do you know much
I should know this. I was getting this all together, and I didn't even think about getting the exact wording. Do you know the lawsuits that TCC and ABCP put across? Was that to the federal government?
That is correct. It was to National Marine Fisheries Service. It's a procedural lawsuit. This happens periodically. What they're doing, you can't sue the council. So they're suing the agency. And the agency, National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA Fisheries, relied on old data for this last meeting on the bycatch review. So CCC is saying the data is outdated. They shouldn't have relied on that. And as we're going, that was just a review. And we're going forward into preliminary decision making here next year. So the lawsuit is to get NOAA to update their data.
Thank you. And then the legislature just put across 128. And that's basically trying to close Area M for the month of June. So I don't know if you guys heard about that. with the AYT meeting right before this one and getting more information and stuff. I don't know how that will go there, do you have more information on that, Gail?
Yes, I do. Thank you. So I think, Karma, you and Andy both were on that meeting today with Senator Olson, who is the sponsor for 128, and that is to close down that June fishery at Area M from June 10th until the 29th or the 30th of June, the 9th to 29th. So that would basically shut down most of the area where the big chum bycatch occurs. It's also a lucrative area for sockeye. So the concern was how we can mitigate the impact on those area and fishermen who want those sockeye. That's what they were trying to do with denying Proposal 140. There is really no way to do it. So we're looking at getting as much support and information as we can to the senator and to other legislators. Last night, the Fairbanks AC passed a resolution to support a letter of support for 128, which I'm drafting this weekend, and that will go out to all the legislature. Time is very important. There is going to be a hearing next week in Judiciary, which is the committee where the bill is going to be discussed first. And so the aide, Almira, who is the aide to Senator Olson, said she would let us know the hearing time, and then it gets referred to rules, I believe. So if we want people to testify, we need to be on alert. This could happen very quickly. If it doesn't pass out of committee onto the floor, then it will not have a chance for this legislative season. And we're trying to shut it down for this year. The issue also is that we want to have some genetics that come out of here. So at least we know if this goes true and there is no harvest during that time period, we want to know how we can do a test fishery to get the genetics of where those fish are bound. And that's what I know right now.
Thank you very much, sir. I just wanted to get the AC an update on that. And I just wanted to let you guys know also that from the bycatch task force, the commissioner was instructed to pick six people from the bycatch task force to be on the bycatch advisory committee. And so I was chosen for that. And so some of the recommendations for management
for research and for engagement throughout the state. We're going to break those all down and figure out how to get that information out to rural Alaska. So already I've put in at our first meeting all the entities along the Yukon, YERSPA and all them, all their contact information. So any engagement that the BICATCH Advisory Council has or public meetings will be sent to all ACs and sent to all of the organizations along the Yukon and Kuskokwim River. And so I'm going to really push to try to get any kind of information to everyone on BICATCH stuff. And then we have some recommendations like forming a BICATCH task force, permanent BICATCH task force, who are working on these issues. There was the CHUMCAP, which went across, and North Pacific really worked on that this last, that was up for debate big time, the CHUMCAP. What I really need, and even from the Intertribal Fish Commission or Dale or Andy, is support in these. Like, sometimes I have questions, and I just don't know who to talk to, and I need to reach out to someone fairly quickly about just ideas and stuff. It's kind of daunting to be on there. I'm kind of the only one that's a lot are, of course, in support of BICATCH, the trawlers and that. So I really need a team of people that can help me in pushing these and just, I guess, more for my confidence level. So I just wanted to bring that to your guys'
attention. Madam Chair, I just want to congratulate you first. This is a very, very important role, and I want to congratulate you. Certainly from my viewpoint, you can call me at any time. If I don't have the answers, I will get you to somebody who does have some answers.
Okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, Andy.
Thank you.
Yeah, same for me, Karma. You can always reach me by email, and most of the time, if you leave a message, I can call you back so we can cover it much quicker. But I'm always available, and I really applaud you for jumping in. It is a huge learning curve, and I really applaud you for taking that on. It's really important work, and it's very complicated, but certainly there are a lot of people around you that can help steer you and help you understand some of those. So if I can be of any help, reach out anytime. And I'm usually pretty good at checking emails or phone messages at least twice a day anyway. So thank you, Karma.
Thank you. The BICATCH task force was very daunting for me, especially to be so new in this whole arena. I felt like I could have done a lot more, but it was, I guess I can say that it wasn't really mapped out for me, like what was actually expected of us, and then it was like trying to figure out while you're going exactly what's needed from you or if anything is, and it wasn't very clear. this is going to be better. We have a chair that's really willing to work with me, and she's been really supportive, and she's not working for the trawling industry. So I'm excited to hopefully do something good, or at least just get information out to rural Alaska, more. So thank you.
Welcome to the world of fisheries, politics, and regulations, Karma.
Yeah.
And we've all been there. We've all been in your seat, so we understand.
There are a lot of scientists and very smart people that will take the time you down and explain it in layman's terms. And when you find a few of those people, don't let go of them, because all it takes is one or two, and they can really walk you through the process and make it a little bit more simple to understand. But one of the techniques that a lot of the federal agencies do is they try and complicate it so much that unless you're a lawyer, you're not going to even understand what they're talking about or the process. that's their tactic for continuing to do what they want to do. So arming yourself with information and understanding is how you become effective. And that just takes time. But, yeah, once again, applaud you for that, Karma. And you'll have a lot of support. You just got to reach out and ask for it.
Thank you, guys. Is there any other comments for tonight before we move on?
I would just like to make, I'm sorry.
Hold on, Anna.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Don.
Okay, next. Yeah, this is Don. And next week, my wife and I are going to a Europa meeting in Fairbanks, and we're going to bring up the threat proposal again. She's been talking to it at the meeting she's been going to, and we're going to keep talking about it until something happens. Okay, your turn, Andy.
Great. That's good news, Don. I guess the only thing I was going to bring up is I wonder if this AC would like to be in support of the letter that the Fairbanks AC is going to draft in support of Senator Olson's bill, which was what number, excuse me, I think it was 128. Is that correct, Gail?
Yeah, that is 128, correct.
Okay. So if that's the case, I'd like to just put this on the table as a motion that the Eagle AC support the letter being drafted by the Fairbanks AC in support of Senator Olson's proposal 128 to close the Area M June fisheries as the date stated.
I'll second it.
And I'm just going to reference all of our previous comments about that discussion, and hopefully we can be unified with the Fairbanks AC in support of that. That's all, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Great.
Carmen, before you wrap up here, I just want to circle back, and forgive me if I just missed it, but I don't know if the motion that before you started getting into fish, so circling all the way back to wildlife, specifically Martin and Lynx, I don't know if that if there was actually a taken on the AC fitting a proposal to the Board of Game. So there's that, and tell me in a second if you already did or not, but I just wanted to say on that matter, I pulled up the regulations, and Andy, I don't know if you already had this, you had said that you wanted that proposal to have Martin trapping in Unit 25B and 20E to align with Lynx. So it looks like, at least for Lynx in Unit 20, my mistake, I was reading in 24. So yeah, so the deadline or the end of the season for Lynx is March 15th, and it is the end of February for Martin in those units. And I do have the regulation number and the page number if you wanted those to put on the proposal. So I can tell you those now or give you most to get a pen. They're found on page 885 in the regulation book, and that's the full legal book. And it's 5AAC84.270, and then parentheses 6. That's the section pertaining to Martin trapping seasons. And then again, I apologize if the AC already concluded your action on this or if it was still in discussion when you moved on.
Yes. Did not make a vote on it.
Okay. So do I hear a motion to...
Madam Chair. I think the motion was made and seconded, and we voted in the affirmative to support it. And so what I would maybe ask is for Ruby, when she writes the minutes, to footnote the regulation numbers that Kyle just gave us, 5AAC84.270, parentheses 6. And so that would basically just be adding 15 days to the Martin season to align with the close of Lynx in 20E, as in Echo, and 20, as in Bravo.
It's 25.
B. Yeah, B is in Bravo. So that's the other side of the Yukon River from Eagle.
And Andy, just to clarify, I believe the motion was made and seconded, but I don't know that a vote was taken. So that's all I was wanting to make sure that you see if that you concluded that action called the question.
That's my question. To my recollection, yes, we did.
I have that we, Andy motion, Don second, and then we went right into Chinook.
Okay. So,
okay.
We can just vote at this point?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hoff.
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. There's one last item, and Kyle can give you the information on this. The Fairbanks AC last night voted to support the Nanana AC proposal to bring to the joint board to have remote testimony for the Board of Fish. So we're going to support
them. And to be clear, Dale, Minton and Nana AC has not yet met, so it's not really their AC yet. Their proposal yet. I know that they will discuss at their meeting next week. And I think before you got on the call tonight, I did mention to Carl that I do have that sort of draft language together for the Minton and Nana AC, but if the Eagle AC wanted to submit a proposal to the joint board requesting that remote testimony be allowed for members of the public for both Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game meetings, I do have that language ready in a draft proposal. I could share that with your AC. So if that was something that your AC was interested in submitting, you could just simply make a motion and move that forward to me.
I would like to. It's super expensive to travel to Anchorage for those Board of Fish meetings. And if some of us could be at home testifying and still, you get 3 minutes. Why can't you not do that over, say, Zoom or over, the phone? It still should be the same. I was able to have somebody read it for me, but I couldn't give it myself because I wasn't there. I had COVID. So I really think that's an important one there, especially with the high hotel costs and stuff. The hotels are almost $300 a night. So I would like to do that if somebody, I would like to put a proposal in for that or support or whatever. Whatever you think would get the biggest impact.
I think the most expedient way to do it would be for your AC to make a motion to submit that proposal, and I can share that draft language with you.
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion.
Andy makes the motion.
I'll second.
Yeah.
Tom second.
Okay, Kyle, do you need a language in that motion?
Sure. Or if the intent is pretty clear, we've pulled the language to reference the right section from the book. But if the intent is to allow remote testimony during board meetings, that's pretty clear.
That's the motion.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Awesome. Thanks.
I have one last question.
Yes.
So I don't want our board to lapse. So I know we
2021 was our last vote. And I want to make sure that all of our members are still voting. I'll check that for us. I'm looking at it. We've got a lot better. Open.
Yeah, so I can kind of down your current membership, and you do have a couple of expired seats. Board support's been trying to be real gracious with ACs getting kind of reactivated after kind of taking a pause during the pandemic. You're definitely not the most lagging in terms of expired seats compared to several advisory committees, but you do have looks like two seats had expired last year. Mike McDougald and Don Woodruff, three seats, and Andy Bathich expired in 2022, June of 2022. And then there's a few more coming up, going to expire this coming June. So Ben Junaby, Sonia Sager, and Jackie Helmer. Then the other seats here, Parma, Steve, and Chalia, you don't expire until 2024. There is a bit in the book that, you know, sort of specifies that expiration should be staggered so that not more than one third of the committee comes up for election in any given year. We've been trying to do our best with that, considering how many ACs kind of had all of their seats expired. So there's quite a different sort of successful way to do this. If your AC did want to hold an election yet this winter, you do need to have a 2 weeks notice. So I'm planning on going off contract after the 5th of May for the summer, but I'd be happy to kind of help organize an election meeting if you wanted to have one yet before I go off contract. It would just need to be at least 14 days from today. You could also plan for an election meeting for your first meeting in the fall.
Yeah, this meeting was a little too quick to put it in before I left, so I was planning on kind of doing that either when I get back or in the fall. I think that kind of got away from us a little bit. But how does that affect the people that are expired, like,
It doesn't. We, at board support, we've been, there's nothing in regulation that, like, specifically says, like, you're no longer acting as a committee member after the term's expired. It just says, you know, or until an election meeting takes place. And so we've been interpreting that at board support that, time served is time served. So until a member, vacates the seat, or an election can be held, for example, Don and Mike and Andy, absolutely still active members of this committee, even if those seats are expired. It would be good to get an election meeting scheduled, not let this kind of stagger. But just as a reference point, I've got at least one other advisory committee that we're working on getting a seat that was last filled in 2012. So you guys are a decade ahead. So there's definitely, we're trying to be flexible with understanding that holding the elections has been kind of interrupted with the pandemic and just getting things back and active again. So the long answer, but time served is what is recognized by board support.
Thanks, Sharon.
Kyle, I think I need to hold on, Andy, just real quick. Kyle, I think you and I need to just get together and figure out those terms, because I looked at mine the other day and they might have been a little different on the papers that I have filled out from people. So if we could get together and just work that out, and then when do you think would be the best time to try to do that before, like, May or in the fall?
Sure. Yeah. No. We could definitely connect next week. I've got a couple AC meetings but during the day, but not. Not too, most of them are evening. Anytime next week that would work good for you, I should probably be able to make that work as well. I just have tied up with an election meeting Monday afternoon. But I'd be happy to look at if there's I'm just going off of what I had on our records for when these seats were last elected. Seats always expire at the end of June of a given year, and terms don't exceed 3 years after election. So if an election was held any time in 2021, for example, that would be a seat that expires in June of 2024.
So I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks, so I'm not going to be here. I leave on Monday. Can we do this, like, first time when you get back? Or yeah, who is that?
I'd recommend the first meeting of your advisory committee in the fall as an election meeting. If you all want to throw out a date tonight so that I can mark that on the calendar and make sure to get the election information posted 14 days in advance, we could do that, but I think it would be perfectly reasonable to wait until the 8th week convenes in the fall to hold your elections.
When do you come back?
I usually come back on contract sometime in the middle or end of September.
Madam Chair, Andy?
Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Thank you, Karma. I'd like to take Kyle's recommendation and set up our full elections for our AC absent seats or delinquent seats for our very first meeting of the fall season, date to be determined. And I'm not sure when we normally meet in October, but you know, I'm guessing somewhere around the 15th or 20th, somewhere around there. Usually the Eastern RAC meets somewhere in that first or second week, so maybe that third week of October for our first fall meeting, and then we could have elections on that date would be my suggestion.
That sounds perfect to me. And that way, Ruby and I could plan that out post and really get the word out, and then people could set up their email.
I have a question. Kyle, and this is like what Steve was saying just a moment ago, but the fact that we have three expired seats, is that going to affect some of the way we've been voting? Like, is it still considered valid?
He just said it was, yeah.
It is, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
100%, yeah. Sorry if that wasn't clear. Yeah, I think the goal is that, you know, in the near future, we'll have kind of all the ACs across the state with current membership without any expired terms, but we have not been booting folks off of the AC because the AC wasn't able to hold an election. So that's kind of the way that we've been interpreting it. We haven't had any pushback on that yet. So long as folks are still showing up and taking an active part in the meetings, until an election meeting is held, they're still an active member, even if their term is technically expired.
And this whole process has been a learning experience, so we're going to get it down so good, you guys will be on top of it. And then I'll be up for election. Okay. Any other comments? Well, Kyle, so can you put us on your calendar for maybe the third week of October?
Yeah, do you have a day of the week that you'd like?
Let's say a Thursday.
Day of the week.
Oh.
The third Thursday would be the 19th.
October. Ooh, we might get a reason off that. We can put it, and then if I need to, we have a sub-regional meeting, I think, in Tetlin around then, but if I need to change it, I could change it in like just a couple days or whatever. Okay?
Okay.
So let's plan for that, and then I'll work with you, Kyle, to make sure that that doesn't conflict with another date.
Sounds
good. All right. Good meeting. Any other? Thank you, Jeff. Wells and Jeff Gross for being on. Thank you, Gail Vick, and all your information, and who else is there?
Bye.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you so much for your help, Kyle.
Thanks for all of you. Thanks to all of you for your great work.
Okay. Often there's a couple templates for the board of game and the joint board proposals that UAC is going to submit here. I'll send you something to work with so you can distribute that, and I'll have a look.
And Kyle, work with those proposals, or do we need to find somebody to help her write that?
So I think as far as I know, there was only the two proposals that UAC was going to submit on the fish and game side. I know there are several of those resolutions, so there's the board of game proposal dealing with the Martin trapping season, and there was the joint board proposal dealing with remote testimony. I think I've got a mostly completed template here with the language for that joint board proposal that I can share with UAC. And then you can add anything to it that you like. I mostly just tried to find the right sections of the regulation book and what language would need to be changed to have that effect. And then I can also just throw together something pretty quick here with the right part of the regulation book for that Board of Game proposal. And then I'll share the transcription file from this recording and then a link to the recording as well. And I think that might have plenty of a great place to turn to at least for kind of trying to come up with the language for like the justification statement on those proposals, which is the response to the question, what is the issue that you're trying to address and why?
Wonderful. Thank you, Kyle. You're very helpful, and like we really appreciate you. So.
Well, thank you for trying that.
Carmen, I have one request to Kyle.
Sure.
Yeah.
I was wondering if it would be possible for you to send me all of the contact emails and phone numbers for our AC. Please send that to me, and then when I write these resolutions, I can CC you and send them directly to everybody. And for you, Chalia, if I have your phone number, I could always call you up and just read the resolutions to you, and we could discuss it on the phone since you don't have email. But the current contacts would be very helpful at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Normally, I thought I already had shared this with the members in your IC, so if I haven't, I'll send that either tonight or first thing in the morning. I typically try and share all the contact info I have for AC members with all the current AC members, so you can coordinate on arranging the right meeting time for folks, et cetera. So I'll share that tomorrow morning.
Thank you. Perfect. Thank you, Carmen. Good meeting.
Yeah, good meeting, guys. And okay, so if there's nothing else, I guess I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Robin. Ron. Second. All those in favor.
Aye.
Opposed. Great. Thank you. Great call. It's pretty outside.